The views expressed on the Making It Matter podcast are that of Gunnar Esiason, Julia Ray, and guests, and not necessarily those of the Boomer Esiason Foundation. Nothing in the Making It Matter podcast should be considered medical advice. Such advice can only be given by a physician who is experienced with cystic fibrosis. The Boomer Esiason Foundation, Gunnar Esiason, Julia Ray, and guests cannot be held responsible for any damage which may result from using the information on this podcast without the permission of your medical doc. You're listening to the Making It Matter podcast with Gunnar Esiason and Julia Ray, presented by the Boomer Esiason Foundation and GunnarEsiason.com.
Hey there, it's Gunnar Esiason, and thanks for joining Julia and I for episode 50 of the Making It Matter podcast series, Claire's Place.
Hi, everyone. Making It Matter is a weekly podcast presented by the Boomer Esiason Foundation and GunnarEsiason.com, highlighting the challenges that people with CF face and the people who face them.
Since Julia, our guest, and I all have cystic fibrosis, we're mainly compliant with the National Cystic Fibrosis Guidelines regarding patient interaction and cross-infection by recording via Skype. This podcast was made possible by Novartis, Vertex Pharmaceuticals, and the Digital Credit Union. So big thanks to them for always supporting Boomer Esiason Foundation educational initiatives. All right, so we're here for the big 5-0, our 50th episode. And today I'm really happy to announce our guest is Claire Weiland. She's 20 years old with cystic fibrosis, and she's coming to us from California. Claire, why don't you say hi to the folks out there and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Howdy. So yeah, my name is Claire, 20 years old, pretty much said all the basics. I was diagnosed at birth with CF and started a nonprofit when I was 13 years old to try and help other people with CF. And then over the past few years, started doing public speaking, a lot of activism work, started YouTube, podcast, the whole shebang, you know?
Cool. So, I mean, it sounds like you're very active in the advocacy world, which is what we love. In the cystic fibrosis world, because obviously the awareness for a rare disease such as CF cannot be great enough. So I want to sort of jump into it here. Let's talk a little bit about your life growing up with CF. What was that like for you? And, you know, how did you balance growing up with CF? You're obviously just coming out of your teen years. How did you manage all of that, with your cystic fibrosis?
Sure. It's interesting. I feel like I've talked to some CFers who have similar experiences and some who have totally different. But for me, I really, really had an amazing childhood in the sense that, like, I loved being in the hospital as a kid. I started, which is such a weird notion, but I started decorating hospital rooms when I was around 7 or 8, and I would go totally crazy. Like, I'd have people bring me twinkle lights and lamps and pillows, and I'd move around the furniture and I'd do illegal stuff by plugging in twinkle lights, which you're not allowed to do. And it just became like this thing that really made me feel safe in the hospital and made me feel like it was kind of my home away from home. So I remember even when I was a really little kid, sometimes when I'd start to feel myself getting sick or when an infection was coming on and I kind of knew I was going to have to go in the hospital, it was never that terrifying for me. I kind of loved it. It was like my little escape. And I'd cause shenanigans in the hospital and all of that. But I think for me, the big balance was more so around me learning how to actually take care of myself properly, because I am someone that really deeply does not like doing anything unless I feel like it's important and like I feel like it's for something bigger than just myself. And when I hit kind of my preteen years, I hit this weird phase where it felt almost selfish to be doing treatments all the time. You know, it felt like this, what was I doing it for? I watched a few good friends of mine pass away from CF. And they did perfect treatments all the time, like took all the medications, did everything perfectly. And they passed before me, and they even had a more mild case than I did. And so I just thought, you know, is this all it's going to be, where I just do treatments day in and day out, and I don't get to, you know, I don't get to feel like a full functioning human being, you know? So for me, I just kind of had to find a balance of doing things that were more than just taking care of myself, being more than just my health and more than just my treatments and more than just being a good patient. I also wanted to be a good person. You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to be able to go to clinic and say, yeah, I'm taking care of myself. Yeah, I'm doing what I need to do. But at the same time, I wanted to say, yeah, I'm doing what I need to do in life. I'm being a stand-up human being. I'm contributing something. I'm living my life, you know? And And that was really the balance for me, is finding something that made me want to take care of myself, because I was inspired enough by life that I actually was willing to do treatments. And that kind of came from the foundation, and that came from all the advocacy work and all of that, because I felt like, you know, I started the foundation when I was 13, and that was exactly when I needed it. Like, that was when I needed, because I think high school is the hardest for CF, you know, because you really start to feel how horribly unfair it is. Like, I don't know, I remember this time in class where I was looking around at friends that I had been at, like, a little house party the day before, and I was looking around at the kids that I was, like, sitting with, who were literally, like, just got totally messed up and were, like, wasted for, like, 2 days straight. And I was sitting there, like, having to, like, go home to do an hour worth of breathing treatments so that, like, I wouldn't pass out at a party. I'm like, it's just the level of, like, the level of energy that it takes to just be able to maintain is so intense that I needed to feel like it was worth it. I needed to feel like I was doing something worthwhile in order to put all that energy into myself. So I think the foundation really saved my teen years, you know.
Was it something in you that clicked that made you think the foundation would change your perspective? Or was it like a moment you can like specifically recall? Mm-hmm. What was it that made that shift?
Well, so the foundation came from me nearly like dying, as most cool things in life do. But I had... You know, I had gone in for a fund application, right, to kind of tie up my stomach a little bit. And I just, I ended up getting blood sepsis. I got a blood infection. And it put me in a coma for 3 weeks, and I was on an oscillator. And in the beginning, my lungs were failing. And so I remember that really specifically, where I felt myself desatting. And I remember the doctor saying, like, when they had the realization that my lungs were failing and they were going to have to intubate me. And I remember thinking, this is the big, like, moment. I could die. I felt myself slipping. I felt my consciousness fading and all that crazy stuff. But the thing that really hit me wasn't fear or anything like that. It was more so just, I felt like I was kind of grieving in a way. Like, I felt like there was so much more that I could have done and been for people, you know, that the experience I went through as someone who is sick is a lot deeper than just helping people who are sick. You know, I mean, it's not just about CF. It's not just about being sick. It's not just about, you know, trying to get healthy. I realized that there's so much life to be lived in every single part of, you know, in all the different circumstances and all the different situations that people are in. There's so much life to be lived in all of it. Even if you're stuck in the hospital, even if you're sick, even if your life doesn't look normal, there's so much to be had and experienced and to make from that. And so I just felt, I remember having this feeling of like, not yet. I don't, like, there's more I can do. There's more I could be. And I really kind of grieved my own life when I was dying. And I wasn't scared. I just was like, wow, there's so much more I could have done. And then I could have been so much more than just a sick person in everyone's eyes, you know? And so when I got out of the coma, it took around 2 or 3 months for me to be able to walk again and hold a fork again and, you know, and sit up and all of that. It was a really long recovery process. And through those months was when I kind of had the, what you were saying, that was when I really had the kind of realization that I saw a need in, especially in Los Angeles, because it just started in LA. My hospital's in Long Beach. Sorry.
I think it's
the only podcast I can cough on and give me chill. But, you know, my hospital's in Long Beach, and Long Beach is a pretty rough area. So there's a lot of really, you know, lower income families, and really intense cases of CF, and, you know, moms that had like 5 children and they all had CF, and they were single moms and they didn't have, you know, they couldn't keep a job long enough because they had to be in the hospital and all of that stuff. And so I saw this need for some kind of financial support, especially just in Los Angeles, in that little area. And my mom had lost her job trying to be with me in the hospital while I was dying. And so the foundation initially just came as a, wow, I need to raise money to help my mom. And then I realized I was pretty good at it. And I was good at getting money for people. And I'm like, why not use that and put it to, you know, helping other moms who are in the same situation? And then from there, it just kind of grew to, you know, being any kind of support system that people need, you know. And so it really just came out of the time when I was stuck in a bed and couldn't move and had to do something.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting where the motivation for these things come from. You know, I think we've always talked about how for a lot of people with shape, there's always that one moment that sort of changes things. You know, Julie talks about all the time when she actually lived in LA and she had a lung collapse and that sort of changed things for her. And then, you know, for me, it was when I had pancreatitis my sophomore year of college, that sort of, you know, was a little bit of an eye-opening experience for me there. So I think the motivation to sort of continue to promote the successful life that people with CF can live and that we're capable of living and that we fully expect ourselves to live, not only comes from, you know, the really terrible, horrendous situations that we sometimes find ourselves in, but also the day-to-day life of the people around us. Yeah. And it sounds like, you know, you've had these relationships with your friends, your family, and, you know, you're these social situations that you found yourself in to points where, you know, you've gotten yourself the motivation to get through to the next, you know, I would say the next hurdle or the next battle. Because we all know that within CF, you know, you sort of climb over one mountain and then you know, you may have easy going for here or there. And the next thing you know, you're faced with, you know, getting another tube. Exactly. Another tube stuck down your throat or something like that. Yeah. So, you know, I think you really put it pretty well in saying that, you know, the treatments are just a singular part of life, but to the next point, they're also, you know, I sort of look at them as like the gate that we have to get through to start the day and then the gate that we have to get through to fall asleep again at the end of the night. And ultimately, until you sort of do those, or, you know, you pay your toll at the gate, then you can do those things. And, you know, life doesn't necessarily have to be fair. It's just the way that it is for certain people, and we find ourselves in that situation. But moving on from there, you know, I want to sort of talk more about some of the advocacy that you've done a little bit more frequently. I think if anyone has a Facebook page, they've probably seen the video that you did. It's been shared like millions of times. It's crazy.
Apparently.
Yeah. So, you know, what has that been like, you know, the advocacy part of CF, and why do you feel the need to do that?
Well, I think the reason actually that I feel the need to do it is mostly because I would meet other people with cystic fibrosis when I started doing the foundation stuff. And a few people would hear about me and all that. And I talked to them online, and there was a lot of them that I'd talk to, a lot of people that I'm now close with, that would feel almost embarrassed of having CF and like didn't tell their friends. Or I knew, you know, like the handful of people that I talked to who had CF, who never told anyone that they had CF.
And yeah, we run into that all the time. And it's very, I wouldn't say it's a unique thing to CF, because I think having a chronic illness or a chronic disability like that we all live with is a huge burden for people and their families and their friends to carry. So, I do understand it. Sorry to cut you off, but, you know, we definitely see that a lot too.
Yeah. So when I started kind of like, you know, I guess talking to people more in the CF community, because after I'd lost a few friends, I kind of like shut off from the CF community because I was like, no, I'm not doing it anymore. I'm not being close to people that I know I might lose. But I started kind of rebuilding that, and I realized that a lot of the reason that people don't tell other people that they're close to about CF is because no one understands it. No one has any concept of the complexity in it. And I also feel like there's a tremendous amount of pressure and guilt that's put on people with CF from a really young age to take care of themselves. And that's a huge burden, like you were saying, that very few people understand. And I think, too, that the reason it's important to talk about CF and the experience with CF is because, to me, it relates to just the human experience in general, which is that, you know, we are all born with this huge burden of just being alive. You know what I mean? It's an insane burden just in and itself. I mean, with people with CF or with an illness, it's kind of like a magnifying glass is put on it. So all the things that normal people face in their life, we just face like all at once in our face, and there's no way to get out of it. You know, but I think everyone is kind of going through the same stuff. Like, how do you be, you know, how do you find out where your place is? How do you find what it is that you have to give? How do you find the right kinds of people? And you know what I mean? And have people that you can really trust in your life, all that stuff. It's just things that we have to deal with more intensely. So I started realizing that through talking about CF and about the problems that CFers face, I could also just talk about the problems that regular people face and just the problems of being alive. And it also, I think it's important for people who have suffered in any regard or in any way, or have gone through pain or have gone through struggle, to actually talk about it and have some pride in like your experience of being a hurt person, having lived through that, because it normalizes it for other people. And it's like comforting, you know, like I remember how comforted I was when, you know, the Stenzel twins, the Isabel and Anna Stenzel, the power of two, who got the lung transplant and all that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I remember they were the first CFers I was ever in a room with, right? Because, you know, they were so distant from everyone else with CF. And they're the first ones that I ever met. Sorry. Persons I ever actually met. And I remember just being like this wave of like feeling so comforted because they were so open with their experience and they were so, you know, they're so real with people with what they'd been through. And I realized that like, wow, I don't have to, there doesn't have to be shame or guilt around this. And if each individual person kind of steps up to the plate and shares their experience and their reality of being sick and having gone through what we've gone through, we can kind of make it more and more and more comforting for everyone else, you know? So that's my experience in it. And then also on top of it, you know, it needs more funding. It needs more, like it always needs more help. It's such a huge burden, like you were saying, on the people and on their families, that I think that once people understand CF and once people kind of realize its effect and how huge it is on not just the person but the entire community, people do really want to help and people do get really inspired by it. And so,
You definitely make a good point there. And I'll, you know, Julie can speak to this too. A few weeks ago we had our college roommates on here, and one of my college roommates was a buddy of mine from high school. And, you know, I think he was prepared in his own way to live with me at college, but I don't think he had the full grasp of what it was going to be like when he lived with me in college. And, you know, the first 2 days was there, you know, my parents dropped us off and, you know, they're like, okay, David, you know, this is what it's going to be like to live with Gunnar. Like, I hope you're on board with this, you know, better buckle up. And, you know, over time they quickly learn what it's like to live with CF, because you do these things behind closed doors growing up, you know, when you're just a kid, a lot of the time that you're just doing treatments, you know, your parents are there, or maybe some family members or a close friend or two is here every once in a while, but you, the patient, are the one that's doing the treatments every single day, day in and day out, and the other people do not get to see it. They do not understand what goes into it. You know, the planning ahead that has to happen when you're taking, you know, enzymes or whatever, you always have to have things, you know, within reach and within grasp, and you have to be able to you know, understand the consequences of certain situations and put yourself into the best situation possible that you may always be successful. You know, right. I look back to a couple months ago, we have a hockey tournament for the BEF, the foundation, one of our big fundraisers. And, you know, you play 3 or 4 days of hockey in a row, and the next day, you know, I find myself trying to recover from that weekend of playing hockey for the next 2 weeks. Yeah. You know, I have to get back to my baseline. And I think Julia feels the same way in a lot of ways.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and I certainly identify with the burden of doing the treatments. Like something you said earlier, Claire, like I remember when I was in college comparing my schedule to my friends and going like, oh, and then I did the terrible calculation of how much time in my life I've spent on.
That's always a fun one.
Which is like, yeah, it was a very happy moment in my life. No, so it is so hard to kind of find the balance and understand your limits actually there are limits, and you kind of have to figure out where you can push it and where you can kind of say, okay, I need a break. And it's a learning curve, and I think it's obviously an important one, because unfortunately, Gunnar said life's not fair, and we do have to monitor, you know, the exertion and all that good stuff that our peers don't have to think about twice.
The only way to learn is by pushing it, I think, because you're never really going to know where you're, I mean, everyone has boundaries and certain capabilities and certain skills and certain aspects of life. But I think, the only way you're going to find those boundaries is by pushing yourself to the best of your ability and to the limits that your body can maintain. You know, for example, when I was in college, it wasn't, you know, out of the question to be up till 2, 3 a.m. in the morning a few nights a week. That was just the way college was. You know, I always tell the story where I funneled the beer through my feeding tube. That, you know, that's just the way that the things worked. But, you know, I think, you know,
that's, I've done that too.
You know, but, so, you know, nice that I'm not alone. But, you know, I think ultimately, you know, that was a limit that I found, and I have not gone back to that place since. You know, but I think, you know, now that I'm older, you know, staying out to 2, 3 in the morning is, you know, several times a week is just not an option for me now that my disease has progressed to a certain state and ultimately my life has to conform to the way that, you know, my body's limitations have evolved over time. So, yeah, I do think that, you know, while we do talk about how there really aren't any limits or boundaries, in some senses there are, and ultimately they're learning moments for us because that's how we push our body to the best it can possibly be, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Well, also something I find interesting is the amount of times I've gotten the comment of, oh, well, you don't look sick, you know, and like especially when I'm not wearing my oxygen fuel, or like, or the whole like, wow, you're too sweet to be sick, or like, you look too like vibrant to be sick. I'm like, all right. Yeah, that's great. Thank you. But what I think is interesting about that is I do this mental trick with myself where I will just, if I need to push through and I need to get through something, especially if it's work related, because I live on my own and I have my own apartment and I have for 2 years now, and I pay my own rent and I do all of that and I work, and so that's a huge, like, I can't afford, if I'm sick and I'm in the hospital and I miss, you know, two or three jobs, that could mean that I can't pay rent, right? So I have to really, there's times where I do have to push myself, and what I found is I go in this tunnel of you know, of like pretending I'm not sick and just like, and it's not even conscious.
Mind over matter.
Yeah, mind over matter. It's just like, I'm going to finish this. I'm going to do this job. So I remember this one time I had a big talk coming up and I felt disgusting. I had a fever. I had a headache from coughing all night. I have a YouTube too, but my YouTube leaks. So it will like leak stomach acid onto the blisters around the YouTube. So I was just like miserable. And I had to talk. And everyone backstage was like, I don't know how she's going to do it. We need to cancel. It's okay. We'll get you home. And I'm like, no, it's fine. And they were like, there's no way. And I just like walked out on stage and like just totally fine. No one knew anything was wrong. Everyone was like, wow, you seem so healthy. And I'm like, yeah, great. And then afterwards, I was out cold for like a week. I mean, I was like, I had to go into the infusion center and get fluids and like all that. Because I just totally, that like 10, 15 minutes of being on stage of like tunnel visioning it completely wore me out. But I'm so happy I did that because that talk ended up being really big and it helped me get more stuff. And it was, so it's like, it's kind of finding, like you said, it's finding the areas where you know you need to push yourself just as a person to be able to make it and feel proud of yourself, you know, feel like you're accomplishing something. But at the same time, like, you know, hopefully not be comatose for 2 weeks if you can avoid that.
Yeah.
We always say that, you know, for people with CF, since the disease is, it's not a cookie cutter disease in the sense that every single person has the same, you know, the same sort of, you know, issues within the disease, that every single person's limit is different. It's important to find them. You know, for example, there's people that, you know, just a good day for them is getting out of bed and moving around the house and then walking around the block, coming back and making dinner for themselves or something like that. And then other people, yeah. We had Josh Llewellyn Jones on the podcast the other day, and hey, a good day for him is 24 hours straight of exercising, you know, something crazy like that. So, you know, there's people with CF that are, you know, having, you know, they have such different lives within the disease itself that I think finding the limit to your personal boundaries or you know, whatever may, you know, your life conforming to the disease is different for everybody, and it's important to find those places within the outlook of the disease. You know, we're sort of towards the end here, but so I want to sort of move on from that. And you know, no, don't worry about it. And you know, I read your article in CNN a few weeks or a month or two ago. It was very enlightening. I'll definitely link it to the podcast notes here. And I want to touch on something that I learned about you in the podcast, and it was where you spoke about the potential of lung transplants and, you know, how you've sort of have thought about that in your future and stuff like that. You know, what can you sort of say to that point?
Well, I think it's really interesting because I have a very strong opinion on lung transplant, but I in no way think it's a right opinion. Mm-hmm. Like I 100% acknowledge the fact that my opinion is not correct in this instance, and I probably should try harder to get a lung transplant. I probably should try harder to want it. But the thing is, there's a level to it where I kind of feel like, you know, I want to be able, I know my own lungs, I know my body, I know how it works. And lung transplant for me has always been something, first of all, I hate steroids. I hate them. For some reason, they they make me into like a psychomaniac. Like I lose all my, like I piss off all my friends. I broke up with my boyfriend 1 week on steroids just because, like, I just couldn't hang. So first of all, just the thought of being on steroids forever just makes me want to just end it now, you know? But at the same time, I feel like, you know, lung transplant in its own way is taking on a kind of new set of challenges, and a new set of fears and a new set of you know, medications and doctors and all of that. And so it's not a, for me, it's not, you know, it's not a solid yes or no, but it's something that has never felt like something that I want to do. I would rather try and keep my body and my lungs in the best possible shape that I can and hold out until there's some kind of cure, there's something to get me along further, because medical advancements are so insane with CF that, like, I feel like every few years there's something new that, you know, makes me shoot up in lung function. And, you know, so that's kind of my feeling on it. But in no way do I believe, like, that's necessarily correct, you know, because I think the truth is, as much as it's hard to admit, the truth is that, you know, if something were to happen and if I was to drop really fast, I probably will be like, why didn't I just get on the list? Why didn't I just do that? And so there's kind of this constant battle I'm fighting in my head of, you know, not really wanting lung transplant, not really feeling like I'm ready for it, and not really feeling like I want to trade one illness for another, but at the same time knowing that it's almost stupid, like, not to be considering it and not to be, you know, not to take it more seriously. But, you know, all that. And ever since I was a little kid, too, lung transplant just felt so wrong to me for some reason. And I just felt like I just have like this, I have this feeling that that I'd be taking on a new problem, you know, and that it would just end up being more of a new issue for me. And also, you can't eat sushi, which just, it's so sad.
Done, yeah. I'm surprised to find myself understanding actually what you're saying, like, and kind of going, yeah, I can totally get where you're coming from. Yeah. And I think, yeah, like you said, this isn't a recommendation you're saying. It's just for you personally. And I think that's something we talk about too, is like, CF is not one size fits all, and you have to figure out what's going to work for you. And
right.
And I think it's a hard decision either way. So I think speaking to it is, and speaking honestly, I think one of the things that is so endearing and what makes people share your videos and makes people so attracted to you is really the only way to phrase it. but there is this very candid openness about you, and I think it's what is so beneficial to the CF community too, is how candid you are. You're real, and you're also vivacious and happy. So it's like, but it's just so cool that you're also just happen to be so real. And
thank you.
So I think that's something that people can aspire to too.
Thank you. And yeah, you know, I agree. It's like, even when I don't totally agree with my opinion, with my own opinions, which is, you know, but even though, you know, I know that transplant is a topic that's really heavy for a lot of people. And I feel like me at least saying that it's something that I'm really apprehensive and kind of turned off about doing, I know that there's other people who feel the same way, you know what I mean? And I know that it's something, there's a lot of shame around that too, because I remember when I kind of told my doctors that I really was not wanting to, you know, go after transplant at that moment, they were kind of really, really taken aback. And it was months and months and months of every time I was in the hospital of them being like, you need to do it. I don't know. And I think there is something really freeing to just saying, look, I don't know if this is right or this is wrong or this is what I should or shouldn't be doing, but this is how I feel. and it's my lungs, it's my body, you know what I mean? And I've had so many years of devoutly listening to doctors and you know, and being 100% like, yeah, definitely, I'll work my hardest, I'll do exactly what you say, that there does have to be a certain point where you say, you know, this is a decision that I can make. You know, this is something that is in my own hands. And just being honest that that's what you're going through and that's what you're feeling, I think is important.
Yeah, I think, you know, it seems like there are definitely a lot of opinions about the topic of lung transplant, whether or not a patient wants to go through it or not. And you're definitely not alone in feeling the way you are. I do think, you know, we have met or we have also had the pleasure of having people on the podcast who have gone through the world of the transplant, and you know, that life in and of itself is, for the lack of a better word, it's trading one disease for another, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And I look back to, we had a guest on here, Marge Carfora. She's 13 years post transplant and she's now dealt with cancer 3 different times and has beat it 3 different times, and down to the point where she actually has 2 twins of her own. So she has twin babies. So you know, she's lived a very full life in the sense that, you know, she's had cystic fibrosis, a double lung transplant, beaten cancer 3 times, and now is the mother of twins. So, you know, talk about a life, right? So, you know, there are people that, you know, I think go through transplant and they have, you know, these, you know, wonderful, amazing lives, a second chance at living. And, you know, but there's a set of hurdles, and it's a whole new world that people have to face when they go through it. So, you know, as much as, you know, your opinion may not sit in line with the way that I think about it, it is something that I have to respect, because the way you've looked at it is very inspiring in the sense that, you know, it's ultimately your choice and something that you're going to live with to the point where it is your life and it is your disease.
Yeah. Well, and I think so much of our lives, we feel out of control, out of our control. I mean, everyone's life is out of their control, but it's like what you were saying earlier when you were saying it's in our face, you know, like, mm-hmm. It's like we have existential crises at like 5.
Yeah. It's like when anyone gets a cold, they just automatically start to contemplate their morality. They're like, oh my God, I'm going to die. I have a stuffy nose. Yeah, no, I totally get what you're saying. You know, you cough up blood for the first time and you're like, oh my God, is this happening to me right now? So
everything goes in slow-mo.
Exactly, yeah. The existentialism does happen. And of course, like you said earlier, everything does seem to happen in the middle of the night. You know, you wake up at 3 a.m. and your feeding tube has exploded all over you. You know, there definitely are these moments that we deal with that definitely, you know, I think as much as CF is a physical disease, it's also an emotional burden that a lot of us carry. And that burden is something that, you know, we choose to share or choose not to share with people around us to, you know, whatever extent that we please. But at the same time, you know, we are always constantly fighting an emotional battle, you know, within ourselves. And I think that's part of the whole deal here with CF. But you know, we're sort of running out of time. Claire, I want to give you the last word. You know, if we always like to ask people for advice, or if they were going to give advice to a younger person with CF or a young family with CF, you know, what would you say to them about, you know, living a life to the absolute fullest and or, you know, getting into to advocacy?
I mean, I'd say the best experience that I ever had was when someone came, this friend of the family came to visit me in the hospital when I was maybe 10 or so. And he got down kind of like low, you know how people like get on your level when you're a kid. And he was like, I'm so sorry that you're going through this. I'm so sorry that you're in this. And I was like, no, I'm fine. And he was like, no, I'm so sorry. And I was like, all right, whatever. And then we started talking about his life. This dude is so miserable. Like, his wife just left him. He just relapsed. He's like, you know, he's like just a mess. And I'm like, and you're sitting there and telling me you're so sorry for my existence and my life and what I've been through. And I think that was one of the biggest turning moments for me, because I realized how, you know, your level of, you know, pride in your life and how much you enjoy your life and what you make with your life has nothing to do with your health on a fundamental level, because there are people who are healthy as a clam and are miserable, right? So there's obviously some other factor at play here. And I think that factor is your ability as a human being to take your experience and make something with that, you know, and to make something of value with that and to give. You know, if you look at people in history who have done the most and who have given, really like given back to the world, they're not people who had easy lives, right? Ever. Like you look at like the great musicians and the great artists and the great, you know what I mean, leaders. They're not people who had it easy. They're people who really, really had to suffer. And so there's a lot of wisdom in your experience as someone who's sick. And to look at your life in terms of just, are you healthy or are you sick, is really limiting yourself, right? Like, what do you have to give? That should be where your focus is. And if that is where your focus is, you can have a life you're incredibly proud of and that you enjoy immensely, whether or not you get healthy or not. You know, whether or not you fix yourself or not, you can still live a life that's really full and rich, as long as you're focusing on what you have to give and what you have to offer to the world. And I think, I think that would be my advice to people.
That's some pretty darn good advice.
That's definitely something I think a lot of people can definitely hang their head on. Well, Claire, thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
But that's all the time we have for today. This has been the 50th episode of the Making Matter podcast. Remember, you can follow along with our weekly podcast via my YouTube channel on GunnarEsiason.com or JuliaRay.com. You can also follow us on iTunes. If you do follow us on iTunes, remember to like, share, review, comment. The whole thing is very important for some reason. And you can also follow us on Instagram. The Instagram handle is
@MakingItMatter_CF.
Also, like, share, and review there. Also very important. Regram, too. Also very important. And if you want to see us podcast about something specific, remember, you can always send us an email. My email is gunnersblog@esiason.org. A lot of vowels in there. Good luck spelling it. And Julia's email address is
JuliaRay@JuliaRay.com.
The most original email address in the game. Yep. And you can send either of us a message on Facebook. We love hearing from you. That's how we always get these topics to talk about. Again, Claire, thanks so much for joining us. This is Gunnar Esiason for Julia Ray signing off.